Welcome to Adult Materials. I'm Faye. Hi.
And I'm Rachel. Hello.
This is a podcast where we're reading through and discussing Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials novels, a chapter at a time, spoiler free.
In this episode, we are talking about chapter 31 of The Amber Spyglass, Authority's End.
Hi. Oh, this is quite a big chapter.
Yes. Oh my God, what a chapter.
I was unaware that this chapter was going to be so big. And then when I read the chapter yesterday before making my notes this morning, I messaged you being like, literally everything happens in this chapter. If we'd have had any foresight, maybe we would have like planned for it a little bit more, but it's fine.
This is just par for the course for the latter half of this book, because mm-hmm. everything gets so intense.
Yeah.
Emotionally, actually, everything. I just think that, like, whenever I've read it, it all mushes into one at the end because it gets so chaotic.
Yeah.
And then I forget what goes where. And so reading the chapter titles doesn't give me any clue of what's actually going to happen.
No.
So,
no. Yeah. It's so interesting to me because the, like, chapter title, I feel like, I know we're not into the episode yet, but I'll just say it now while we're at the top. Like, I feel like it was very intentional from Phil to call it Authority's End. And actually, we know that the Authority's not that important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the, like, Wizard of Oz moment. And it's a bit like, yeah, call it Authority's End. And then have literally everything else and everyone else die.
Yeah. Just have the Authority then be like the most throwaway moment of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, cool, sure, great, but I'm too busy thinking about Mazriel and Billy and Dad and everybody.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
It's such a lot. It's a lot. Well, I guess, okay, so before we get into it properly,
yes,
we'll say hi because we're back from a little mini break.
We're back from the break, but we're also recording this before we go on a break. We're time traveling again. As always.
Yeah, so thank you for sticking with us during the break so that I could have a holiday and Rich could get ready for her convention.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
If you came and said hello at Tabletop Scotland, which I hope you did, mm-hmm. then hi.
Because I'm sure we'll talk about that.
I don't know if anyone has or not yet.
I'm sure we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Yes.
If anybody did come over and say hello. And yeah, so we don't have much to say in this intro because we're so far in the past that we'll just age ourselves in the episode if we start talking about topical things.
When has that ever bothered us?
It truly hasn't. It hasn't. I think I'm just I'm like, we need to get into this chapter because there's a lot going on and I don't want to peek at the beginning and use all my energy chatting about shit.
True. Very true. In which case, I only have one last thing to say before we go into the episode properly, which is, hey, Faye.
Hi.
What would your demon have been this week?
So, my demon, we literally were just saying before we recorded, like, I'm struggling to think of demons recently. And I think because we recorded these two episodes, the last episode and this episode, quite close together. I'm still, like, last episode I chose a dolphin. I'm still kind of feeling that, but I'm going to pick a different one. And I was making my notes this morning and I was making my notes in bed because why not? And I think I might have mentioned this before, or actually maybe I'm thinking about in my old flat when the squirrel used to sit on the tree when I used to make my notes.
Yeah, cute.
Yes, but now there is a pigeon that sits in a tree and it's like a really, as much as pigeons are annoying as fuck, it's like a really like nice wood pigeon, I guess.
I was gonna say a fancy pigeon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes that noise that everyone knows, you know, the British alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. And it just sits on this branch and the branch is like way too thin for it to sit on, so it just moves around all the time on this branch and it just like won't move. And I'm like, I appreciate that kind of like stubbornness. But it like just sits and watches through the window. So I'm just like waving to every day and like, oh yeah,
I guess you're my demon now.
Yeah. And I thought, nice. You know what, it'd be nice because I'd like to be sat in a tree being blown around by the wind.
A pigeon feels like a really good, like, incognito demon as well. Like, I feel like people would underestimate you if your demon was a pigeon.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's like, it's a very just commonplace bird. But then at the same time, it's like, oh, but you could really, like, pigeons, especially London pigeons, we know this from living there, are very scrappy, very resourceful.
Yeah.
Will continue hobbling on even when they're really running out of feet and and feathers and everything, and they will keep going. So I feel like it's like a scrappy, resilient, resourceful bird, but like easy to underestimate. So I feel like that's a really good shout.
It always makes me think of it's very similar. Art imitates life. Pokemon, Pidgey. Everyone underestimates Pidgey in Pokemon.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what about you? What would your demon be?
Well, speaking of Pokemon, I was watching, kind of speaking of Pokemon, I was watching TikTok as always, always glued to bloody TikTok. But there was a cute little snippet from a nature documentary about a mouse that lives in the mountains, and it's called the Pika mouse or the Pika mouse, depending how you want to pronounce it. And it does look a little bit like a Pikachu. It's like half rabbit, half mouse kind of vibe. So it's like rabbit proportionally, and it's very round, but then it's got big round rabbit, like big round mouse, like flat mouse ears. And what they do is they are really good at looking out for each other. So they all like keep a watch out for each other to like keep an eye out for like foxes and stuff. But then the rest of the time they're all really busy and they're really like industrious. And so what they do is they collect up loads of like grass and flowers and like wildflowers and stuff, and they store it in their nests so that it turns to hay. So they've got something to snack on over the winter. And I'm like, that's so cute, so industrious, so resourceful. And then all their friends that are like keeping lookout like scream at them if there's a fox nearby. So they're like sweet and industrious, and they're like hardworking, but then at the same time they're not scared to like shout their little socks off if there's danger nearby. And that is cute. That is the energy I want. If they're feeling industrious and crafty, they can help me with my crafts. So yeah, a little Pika mouse, Pika mouse. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I want to say Pika because it's closer to Pikachu.
And they can scream at you if there's danger also. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Thanks, TikTok.
Yeah, always. Last chapter, Mrs. Coulter went to the Clouded Mountain and met Metatron.
Azrael abseiled down the abyss and saw the dust and the ghosts.
Some angels moved a mystery glowing cube with an old guy in it, only to bump into horrid cliff gas.
Will and Lyra stumbled into the middle of the cliff gas, trying to break into the cube.
In this chapter, almost everyone we know and have strong feelings about dies in some way.
Coulter and Azrael drag Metatron into the abyss to spend eternity falling forever.
Lyra and Will release the Authority from his crystal cage, only for him to disintegrate, a very anticlimactic end for an all-powerful being.
We lose Tally and Sally, RIP, but Bear Dad, Balloon Dad and Daddy Jops are back for their final farewells and to help the kids rescue their demons and escape to safety.
Oh, well, well, well.
Well, this is the everything chapter.
Literally everything that could happen does happen in this chapter.
Do you want to know what's nice, though? This quote bit was really nice. Simple bit of research for me.
Do you want to guess? That's good. I'm happy for you. Do you want to guess the image first?
Yes. What is it? I mean, I want it to be the Coulter and Azrael dragging Metatron down into the abyss, but I feel like Phil wouldn't draw two people and an angel because that's a lot to draw.
You're not far off.
Is it the... Is it like them like grabbing the angel wing or something?
There is just one person, one angel involved.
I see.
It is literally a fallen angel.
Oh, nice. Nice. Drawing the angel and Coulter and Azrael and Stell and the... It's a lot to draw.
In that tiny little like box as well.
Yeah, little square.
Yeah. Okay, tell me about the quote.
The quote is... For empire is no more, and now the lion and the wolf shall cease.
Yes.
What's really nice about this quote is that it's from our pal, William Blake.
Yes.
Who we know Phil loves. This is also from America, A Prophecy, which we talked about a few chapters ago. And what's really nice is this is actually just the second part of a line that we've already begun. So, which I think is really cool. It makes mm-hmm. it feel like this chapter and this line is like they're like companions with the other chapter. Mm-hmm. So the chapter that had the beginning of this line was the sun has left his blackness and found a fresher morning and the fair moon rejoices in a clear and cloudless night. And that is from The Abyss.
Ooh.
And the ooh. Full line. Ooh. Yeah, right?
Yes.
So satisfying. The full like little stanza of the poem is... The sun has left his blackness and found a fresher morning, and the fair moon rejoices in a clear and cloudless night, for empire is no more, and now the lion and the wolf shall cease.
Wow.
Satisfying that it's like a little,
yeah,
little chunk that lives together, and it's like just ties those two chapters together in a really satisfying way.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how much Phil really loves that like section of the poem that he's yep. chosen to use two lines that are so closely linked, and it feels just like very... Oh, yes. Makes The Abyss feel even more foreshadowy than we knew it was.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. Yeah. Well done, Phil. It's almost well like you're clever or something.
Right? It's almost like you're a professional author that went to university and stuff.
And all that stuff. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we delve in?
We're delving right in.
Mm-hmm.
And... straight into Mrs. Coulter coultering away,
mm-hmm.
getting her very best classic deceitful Coulter on, and like yeah. a little bit flirty as well.
Yeah,
in a really horrible way.
Yeah. But yeah, for want of a better phrase, I guess. Yes, very very flirty. Yeah, she's
yeah
taking Metatron. My thing about this, because I think obviously last episode we were thinking about the TV show and how like Azriel like abseiled down, and we kept calling it abseiling, but actually they're just walking down on ledges, aren't they? Because I was like, how? Because when I was reading it first, I was like, how the fuck are they like Metatron and Mrs. Coulter getting down there? Are they flying? And I was like, oh no, they're just like walking down there. Okay,
yeah, it's just a bunch of tunnels, but it's a funner image to think of them abseiling
for sure. Oh, 100%, 100%. So I love how pathetic Metatron is, like in these moments where he is just, well, I mean, we obviously get a paragraph later, which we'll probably read, but like where he's just blinded by Mrs. Coulter's charm, like every other man we've seen mm-hmm. in these books.
Yeah, just completely helpless to Coulteriness, but also in a way that's like, come on, dude, you're supposed to be like king of everything and like all powerful and all knowing, and you're just completely floored by the fact that you're driven by somebody stroking your ego. Oh,
there's some like horrible lines in here as well, like mm-hmm. and then he was like trembling with desire next to her, and they mentioned flesh a lot again, and I'm just like, please stop, Phil,
can somebody please take flesh out of Phil's dictionary?
Right. No. truly I do like this bit where her emotions come up and she manages to like trick Metatron again. So they move down, silent, following Lord Asriel. The further down they climbed, the more she felt a great weariness fall over her. What, whispered the shadow, feeling her emotions and suspicious at once. I was thinking, she said, with a sweet malice. Again, malice, we've had that so many times.
Yeah.
How glad I am that the child will never grow up to love and be loved. I thought I loved her when she was a baby, but now... There was regret, the shadow said. In your heart, there was regret that you will never see her grow up. Oh, Metatron, how long it is since you were a man. Can you really not tell what it is I'm regretting? It's not her coming of age, but mine. How bitterly I regret that I didn't know of you in my own girlhood. How passionately I would have devoted myself to you. I can't even finish it without laughing.
It's so bad, but it's so good because she knows yeah. exactly what he needs to hear, and he's so gullible, but it's just like, oh... Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not into it. That's the line that really, really gets me as well, is immediately after, she leaned towards the shadow as if she couldn't control the impulses of her own body, and the shadow hungrily sniffed and seemed to gulp at the scent of her flesh. Absolutely not.
Truly. But like, it's interesting, isn't it? Because like, that line especially, and then there's one later, I think, where again, it says, it gives you the feeling that like her, I guess, bodily instincts and impulses are pulling her towards him, because she like tries to reach for his hand. So I'm like, is there like a little bit of like sexual, weird sexual tension here between them?
I feel like it's just that she's playing it up. Mm. I would like to think there's nothing actually there. Also, I guess it's worth mentioning, like, it's interesting that this chapter, Metatron is perfectly fine being a shadow, being invisible, mm-hmm. not hurting people's eyes, just mm-hmm. being in the room. Like, that whole facade that he puts up to, like, dazzle people with his brilliance is entirely optional.
Yes.
And now he could just be, like, a sneaky little shadow. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's all ego.
Yeah,
it's all truly. Bravado.
Always and forever. So they get to Azrael and she's like, oh, you know, wait here. If you come straight away, then Azrael will let the demons get away. And then my thing here is, obviously there's a lot of talk to talk about in this Azrael moment, but first question, did they plan this before? Because they don't talk about the, like, when they see each other, there's so much, like, there's so much love there already that you kind of think, well, they obviously know they're about to die because they wouldn't act like this with around each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, do they know, or do they just, I don't know. I can't remember whether they talked about it or not. I don't think they did.
Well, no, because the last we see of Coulter before she actually goes to meet Metatron is that she's just like striding out of the room with a pistol in her hand
mm-hmm.
and with her coat on, and we're like, we don't know what was just about to happen then.
True. And then that the pistol don't... never came back.
Oh no, it would be handy if it did, but yeah. Then the next we see of her, she's meeting the authority and she's like going into the Clouded Mountain. So unless they've had a secret meeting we don't know about, this is very improvised on the both of them. But I feel like they have that's their to and fro at the same time as well. Like, they quite like that. Azrael says that Marissa's never failed to surprise him, and this is the biggest surprise of all. Surprise. Jumping into a pit together.
Yeah, I guess we popped a pin in a few chapters where I think Coulter mentioned something about falling forever and ever, and she says it to Azrael. So I would, like, maybe that planted something in both of their minds at that point or something. But
for sure. A thing that I love throughout this whole sequence, and I'm sure we'll pick out a quote that has it in at some point, but like dusted throughout this little bit is descriptions of basically how beautiful this entire scene is. How everything is like misted with or dusted with this layer of lovely golden shimmery sparkling dust with a capital D. And it's a beautiful description, and for like such a intense like emotional moment. It makes it very cinematic in like a lovely way. Yes,
for sure.
I'm here for it.
Me too. So it's funny with this chapter because I feel like I just want to read all of it because it's so like out on the podcast because it's so good. But I think like the Masriel moment is really important, is really emotional. I didn't think that I would get emotional about these two, but I definitely did. I think that it really rounds off Mrs. Coulter's character especially well. I still can't say I'm a fan of Azrael. Like, I know they have this moment where they kiss and he's like, oh, my love. And like, they're all like, oh, but I'm a bit like, I still don't want it for you, Azrael. Do you know what I mean? I don't want you to be happy in your final moments. Sorry about it.
Oh my God, so mean. What I quite enjoy about this though is that this focus of this full section of the chapter is very much on Coulter.
The
most focus we get on Azrael is as he's fighting and doing the brute forcing of the situation. All of the intellect, all of the planning, all of the manipulation of Metatron is coming from Coulter. Like, she is masterminded this whole thing, and Azrael is basically just there to be the muscle.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that as like a way that we're going with this chapter. It's not glorifying Azrael and saying, look how he achieved his amazing goal.
Yeah.
And won this big battle. Look at him, the big general. It's literally just, he's here to get his head bashed in.
Yeah.
And Coulter is here to like manipulate and trick an angel.
Yeah.
And like, I love that.
Now that you've brought it up and you've mentioned Azrael, I do want to say that I think it's a really clever technique from Phil to have Metatron be on the lead up to his death, if you can call falling into the abyss death, the physicality of the fight that takes him down when everything else we've like had, you know, we've heard about battles and we've heard about all this kind of stuff, but Azrael's never got his hands dirty like that. And like Metatron and the angels, you know, Metatron will send the angels to fight for him. So it's like two beings that would usually give that job to somebody else, actually. Like, and also I think like physically fighting an angel is definitely also a bit of a commentary from Phil about religion once again, like mm-hmm. literally having kicking shit out of an angel, having an angel kick shit out of you, like,
yeah,
okay, yeah. Giving him like
this
a physical,
is where we're going.
Yeah, giving him like a physical form that can be beat up, basically.
Yeah,
but before we get there, we have Coulter telling Asriel about what she said to Metatron. They have like a little kiss, and they have like, it's very emotional. She asks him whether they will survive if they fall in the abyss. We won't survive like the Gurse, and he says, not if we fall into the abyss. We came here to give Lyra time to meet her demon and then time to live and grow up. If we take Metatron to extinction, Marissa, she'll have that time, and if we go with him, it doesn't matter. So there's like a big bit here that I want to read.
Mm-hmm.
So he kissed her. She felt as soft and light in his arms as she'd done when Lyra was conceived 13 years before. I really like that line. It's great.
I like that line. It's yeah. another little bit of canon to remind us how old Lyra is, because mm-hmm. we've been yes. saying, I don't know, she's like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
She's about 12 and a half-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is what we know now.
Exactly.
For yeah. sure. Which is wild, because in my head, especially after watching the TV series and because of how they age Daphne and Amir mm-hmm. up in the TV series and give them like a longer period of time when Lyra's sleeping to mm-hmm. give the actors more chance to grow and all that kind of stuff. In my head, Lyra's more like 15 or 16.
Yes.
But no, she's just a little tiny 12 or 13-year-old.
She's a baby. Ah. She's a baby.
Yeah, she is a baby. It's also a really nice moment to be like, this entire section is about Lyra. Their mm-hmm. love is coming from between each other is very much about her. They're about to yeah. sacrifice themselves for her, and they're brought back to the moment when they made her mm-hmm. and how everything has always been about her, even if they try to ignore her. And it's like,
yeah, yeah, yes, for sure. So I told him I was going to betray you and betray Lyra, and he believed me because I was corrupt and full of wickedness. He looked so deep, I felt sure he'd seen the truth. But I lied too well. I was lying with every nerve and fibre and everything I'd ever done. I wanted him to find no good in me, and he didn't. There is none, but I love Lyra. Where did this love come from? I don't know. It came to me like a thief in the night, and now I love her so much my heart is bursting with it. All I could hope was that my crimes were so monstrous that the love was no bigger than a mustard seed in the shadow of them, and I wished I'd committed even greater ones to hide it more deeply still. But the mustard seed had taken root and was growing, and the little green shoot was splitting my heart wide open, and I was so afraid he'd see.
Oh.
The bit that I find so interesting about that is where she says, I wanted to hide it so badly that I wish I'd done more bad things in my life to hide it with.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting, like, concept and, I guess, like, nuanced talking point to be like, is everything that Mrs. Coulter did in her life that was so monstrous and so horrendous, was it all done for this reason right here? And does yeah. that make her like a good person? I know that we've had so many discussions about
yeah.
why there aren't really good and bad people, but is she forgiven for all of that because it was done for this reason? Not that she knew it at the time, but this was the point of it.
Yeah, interesting. Because it's like, yes, and technically doing this is saving the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which is big. But also, if you're going, she's done all of this stuff to protect her own kid, in the grand yeah. schemes of selfishness,
yes,
it's still incredibly selfish.
Yes,
like,
true.
And that's a really nuanced point, I guess, to be like, and it's a beautifully worded statement in terms of being like, the only thing that kept Lyra safe in that moment was all the horrible things Mrs. Coulter had done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, in that moment, you're glad for them. But at the same time, there's a lot of kids at Bolvanger that
truly
would have been fine if yeah. Coulter hadn't gotten involved. So
100%.
It's hard to pass it out. But like, as a statement from Mrs. Coulter's point of view and from her selfishness and our selfishness mm-hmm. as like readers of the books that are invested specifically in Lyra,
uh-huh.
it's really like, yeah, oh my God, I wish she'd done worse things to make Lyra safer as well.
Yeah. And I also think that because we, and obviously a lot of readers, have such affinity with Mrs. Coulter, it's mm-hmm. kind of like, I guess I'm calling us out in a way of being like, well, why are we potentially willing to like forgive Coulter when Asriel now is also sacrificing himself, and we're still a bit like, fuck off, Asriel.
Yeah, I feel less that way about him in this entire chapter than I have in any other chapter about him. And yeah, it is interesting because Asriel's done, you know, he's probably killed a lot less children than Mrs. Coulter.
True.
In the grand scheme of kids they've messed up. But again, it's the way that both of them treat the protagonist of our book, of our favourite books.
Yeah.
You know?
So this is the whole thing with them, you know, being really affectionate towards each other, and this that we haven't seen before with them is one of those things where, like, it's like that classic trope of you're about to die, and now you finally admit that you fucking want to be with each other, and you could have done that while you were fucking alive. And it really, that trope, like, I love it, but it annoys me. I'm like, God damn it, if you couldn't just get over yourselves and admit that you wanted to be together.
Yeah.
Now you won't be. Or you will be, because you'll be falling forever.
I mean, yeah, they have a lot more time together than they ever thought they would.
Yeah, with Metatron third wheeling, like we said in the TV show.
The ultimate third wheel. If I'm gonna be pernickety about this little moment here, Coulter and Asriel are just discussing what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Metatron is a shadow, and Mrs. Coulter has told him to just hide.
Yeah.
Why the hell is he giving them their space and just hiding and not listening in?
Yeah. You would think he would listen in, right?
But especially if he's basically invisible, and he, like, appears from thin air when she calls to him. And it's like, dude, why weren't you listening? They literally just plotted your demise, like, right next to you. What?
So I think we missed it out, but I wanted to read the part where basically she tells him to go and, to stay. And it says the regent was a being whose profound intellect had thousands of years to deepen and strengthen itself, and whose knowledge extended over a million universes. Nevertheless, at that moment, he was blinded by his twin obsessions, to destroy Lyra and to possess her mother. He nodded and stayed where he was, while the woman and the monkey moved forward as quietly as they could. And I know you briefly mentioned it earlier, but you would think that he would still at least listen in.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And, like, I love that. I love that he's so blinded by Mrs. Coulter and by his obsession with... And I love that line of, like, destroying the daughter and possessing the mother. Like, such a well-crafted bit of, like, writing there.
Yes.
But also just, like, come on, Metatron. You're supposed to be all-powerful.
Right?
This is an entire chapter of all-powerful beings just being, like, a little bit. It's like the boss fight is just a little bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Although we're about to go into a very intense boss fight that is not disappointingly written. So
that's true. So I get, like, this fight is, like, nearly, like, 3 or 4 pages long, and it, for me, who's not really a fight, like, I don't really like fights and battles and things, but I really enjoyed this. I think it's obviously because it's very personal and only between, like, 3 people and 2 demons. But yeah, we get a huge, huge, huge description of what happens in this fight. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you want to go into it. I mean, the bits that I wanted to call out were mostly the bits where it's absolutely grim when Asriel gets his head hit by a rock.
Yeah, I think there is... it's fine. It's a while ago. Basically, I picked one of the nicest dust descriptions.
Oh, yeah.
When we were talking about how cinematic it was. And I think we're about to leave the lovely establishing descriptions of how beautiful everybody is while they're standing there before we get into the scrappiness, and so I just want to read a beautiful dust description before we go. Everything, every surface, every cubic centimeter of air was permeated by the falling dust, which gave soft clarity to every tiny detail, and in the dust light Lord Asriel saw that her face was wet with tears and that she was gritting her teeth so as not to sob. Just Mrs. Coulter's beautiful face, all sparkly, like Twilight.
Yes, love it.
All crying.
This is the skin of a killer, Asriel, okay?
It sure is.
It sure is. It sure is. The fight is incredibly well described. I really like that the demons also take center stage in this fight. There's a lot of Stell, there's a lot of LMP. There's also lines where Phil says, the snow leopard demon, again, doing that thing that we have come accustomed to now, where he's like the boy and the girl and Lyra's mother and things like that. Very, like, epic, like, cinematic vibes, reminding us of what we're about to lose.
Yeah, like really plainly stating something, but in a way that like makes it feel bigger rather than smaller. Yes,
for sure. So obviously, because it's me being me, I wanted to read out the grossest bits of the fight.
Of course.
So Metatron hits Azrael in the head with a rock, and the description is just horrendous. Metatron had seized a fist-sized rock, and now he brought it down with brutal force on the point of Lord Asriel's skull. The man felt the bones of his head move against each other, and he knew another blow like that would kill him outright. And then there's another description of it, which is even worse. And by now, Lord Asriel was weakening. He was holding fast to his blood-soaked consciousness, but with every movement, a little more was lost. He could feel the edges of the burns grinding together in his skull. He could hear them. Oh, God.
So grim. I had blood-soaked consciousness highlighted because I was like, what a wonderful way of, like, wording that. So great. Yeah. How's about, forget concussion, blood-soaked consciousness. Yeah, that'll do.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
So great. I love how Asriel and Metatron are getting absolutely fucked up in this. Mm-hmm. And like, aside from getting kind of crushed by a rock, I think Mrs. Coulter still comes out of this like looking pretty good.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that as well.
Yeah.
She gets to fall forever and she's not even got a black eye. We're right. Here for it.
And she does an eye gouge.
Oof. She does. She does a very good eye gouge. Mm-hmm. I'm here for it. LMP gets like joins in. Mm-hmm. And I love how he, classic LMP, he just loves tearing stuff off of other stuff, whether it's like wings off a bat, legs off a butterfly, feathers off of an angel.
Yeah.
He's just really good at like destroying things.
Yeah. For sure. So we have like Stell biting Metatron's neck. Mrs. Coulter holds his neck back.
I love that. Like,
teamwork.
Oh.
Yeah. Asriel's dragging him to the edge. All this time they've been like trying and failing to pin Metatron's wings down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Metatron spreads his wings and starts to fly with Asriel hanging onto him. Would you like to read? I've done some reading. Would you like to read the last moments of Mrs. Coulter and Asriel?
Sure. Which bit are we going for? The very last little bit?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, because he shouts Marissa, doesn't he? And then.
Yeah. They were over the edge of the abyss. They were rising. And if they flew higher, Lord Asriel would fall and Metatron would escape. Marissa, Marissa! The cry was torn from Asriel. And with the snow leopard beside her and roaring in her ears, Lyra's mother stood and found her footing and leapt with all her heart to hurl herself against the angel and her demon and her dying lover and to seize those beating wings and bear them all down together into the abyss. Not her dying lover.
I know, right? God, yes. Also, it's just such a monumental moment. It's like... Yeah.
Why is that not a whole chapter? This is what we get. Then we get a little paragraph break. And we're launching back into, like, cliff gasts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we've finished on such... I know it would mean that the entire chapter was only, like, four... We've had a four-page chapter before.
We have.
That deserved its own chapter.
It did. And I think it's it is one of, along with the death of beloved Lee, it's one of the most monumental things that have happened in these books. And I think we should just, you know, think about how good of a character Mrs. Coulter is. And for, you know, we don't like Asriel, but he's a fucking great character.
He's a well-written asshole.
Well-written asshole. Exactly.
And Mrs. Coulter is like a well-written bitch. Like the best ways. And that's the thing about, like, you know that as characters they're so well written because we have such strong feelings about them either way. And there's people that like love Asriel,
mm-hmm.
and you can see glimpses of that in some of the bits that we've covered, and it's just that we just don't feel that way. But and the fact that you can be so divided on him means he's such a well-written character. Same with Mrs. Coulter. The fact that you can be like, oh, she's an icon, we stan. And then at the same time be like, oh, the atrocities. Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. Is such a good character. That, like, Coulter has one of the best character arcs ever written, 100%. I think. Mm-hmm. Asriel does not have the same redemption arc in a way that resonates with me in any way. Like, he...
Yeah.
kind of just achieves what he sets out to achieve and learns a little bit of empathy along the way. Yeah. And that's not while it's a very classic masculine tale, it's not my preferred like story arc. Yeah. Whereas like Mrs. Coulter's redemption arc is everything.
Exactly. And I think because we are comparing Mrs. Coulter's redemption arc to Asriel's redemption arc in some way, because it's not really.
Well, because he like has like, he starts high and falls in Lyra's estimation and then doesn't actually get to redeem himself. Lyra doesn't know what he's done.
Yeah.
So it's just, he kind of redeems himself, but not really. Mm. And then Mrs. Coulter, again, she starts high in Lyra's estimation, falls, and again, but has so much more of a way to like, she's so much more of a villain to like redeem from.
And I think with Asriel, because we're comparing it to what happened with Coulter's arc, it's like, it just feels a little too late. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I know he's literally just sacrificed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to be said for that. Of course there is. But also, it's kind of one of those things where he only cared about her because she became important. That's still like something that like snags in my brain. Like, if Lyra had nothing to do with any of this and it just happened to be like a battle, what Asriel originally thought it was going to be, like a battle between his forces and the like Kingdom of Heaven's forces, then Lyra wouldn't matter to him at all. And she would grow up knowing that Asriel is her dad and that he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. Do we think, an interesting point, do we think Asriel would have tried to drag Metatron? If he got into a little fight with Metatron, just in the grand scheme of his battle, Lyra is completely irrelevant in this scenario. Do you think he would have like sacrificed himself and jumped into the abyss with Metatron as his like grand hero's end, like no matter what? And that Lyra is somewhat irrelevant because he's still achieving his goal. Whereas like with Mrs. Coulter, she would never make a sacrifice like that if it wasn't for the love that she discovered she had. Like,
true.
Is that a comparison that is worth making?
Like, I think that...
does it diminish Asriel's sacrifice a little bit to be like, you might have done it anyway?
Yeah, because I could definitely see him doing something like that for what you said, to be like remembered as the hero. But also I think there's something to be said of, it could, I think in my brain it could have gone either way, that he would do that to be remembered as a hero, or he like wouldn't join the battle at all and would just get everybody else to do it for him and maybe get involved a little bit.
And it's the personal stake of his daughter that has him getting his hands dirty.
I think it's more the personal stake of Coulter.
Ooh, yeah.
And how much he loves her and how much he wants to prove to her that he's worthy and that he could do something like that. He's basically like showing off in front of her, being like, I'll do it.
Yeah. Also, I'm just putting it out there, Coulter masterminding this whole thing and him brute forcing it means that he's going out on some real strong like himbo energy, like a little bit.
Yeah.
Like he's just the brawn. He's here for the brawn. Mrs. Coulter's the brains and Metatron is the sleaze. Together they're falling forever.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Sounds like the tagline for a film.
He's the brawn, she's the brains. He's the third wheel. They're falling forever.
Yes.
It's like the most boring rom-com you've ever watched, because it's just them falling forever in a void. It's really low production budget.
It's one of those that would feel more like a film experiment that would probably end up being really good.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, have you seen that film where there's like three people falling forever? You're like, I don't want to sit and watch that. It sounds boring. And they're like, no, it's fucking great.
It's like, yeah, actually, it's really part of this big like metaphysical adventure, but like you don't really get to see a lot of that because it's mostly about the rom-com energy of the fact that this angel's a third wheel.
Love that.
Third wheel in a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Shall we move on to Lyra?
Oh,
R.I.P. Coulter, R.I.P. Asriel. Genuinely sad to see them go.
But not R.I.P. because they'll never
oh my god, yeah.
They'll never rest. Be at peace.
Oh god. Okay. Let's move on to Lyra and
to what could have been a whole new chapter.
Yes, for sure, because there's so much shit going on here. So the cliff gas are around the cube. Lyra and Will are there. There's a whole thing with like some more disgusting descriptions of like Will and Tali killing cliff gas. The bit where it says Will, because he stabs one of them, it says Will felt the handle jump 3 or 4 times with the dying heartbeats.
Oh my god, so well described,
right?
I know that the Mazarin scene was very brutal in its own way, but that last description is so beautiful, like the last bit of their end. So I kind of love the like juxtaposition and the jarringness that is going from that to dirty, disgusting Cliff Gas getting slashed to pieces by Will and like stabbed in the face by Tally. Like it's a real like juxtaposition of images of like beautiful, scenic, covered in dust, gorgeous, to very muddy, very messy, very bloody.
Absolutely. We have to say RIP to Tally.
Oh.
Another one off the list.
He went out fighting.
He did.
That's three parental figures down.
Down. Yeah, and you know what? Good for him, because he did go out fighting, and we knew that from the last chapter, Tally and Sally were both like so near to death that the fact that he's gone out fighting, I feel like he would be very proud of himself, and he should be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And poor Will. Like, he is another classic moment of, oh, we'd like to grieve this character, please. No, no, no. Too busy. Mm-hmm. Too busy. But also, Lyra's like, forget our friend that's travelled with us for ages that you've just realised is dead. Look at this shiny box.
Yeah.
What's this shiny box? And Will's just like, my friend. The shiny box there.
Look at this shiny box there. There's someone in there.
Yeah.
There's someone in there. So this is an interesting moment and a nice moment, because obviously we were talking last chapter about how horrible the whole authority thing was, and how like him, you know, being treated terribly by Metatron and all that kind of stuff. And it's nice here, just before the authorities end, that he has at least shown some kindness by Lyra and Will.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very sweet. It's very sweet, this little moment. It's very sad, but it's very sweet. I'm going to read the moment that Will cuts him out. Because Lyra sees him and goes, he must be so old. I've never seen anyone suffering like that. Oh, Will, can't we let him out? Will cut through the crystal in one movement and reached in to help the angel out. Demented and powerless, the aged being could only weep and mumble in fear and pain and misery, and he shrank away from what seemed like yet another threat. It's all right, Will said. We can help you hide, at least. Come on, we won't hurt you. The shaking hand seized his and feebly held on. The old one was uttering a wordless, groaning whimper that went on, and grinding his teeth and compulsively plucking at himself with his free hand. But as Lyra reached in too to help him out, he tried to smile and bow, and his ancient eyes, deep in their wrinkles, blinked at her with the most innocent wonder.
Oh. I just love that somebody showed him kindness before he died, because then we see that he, you know, kind of disintegrates. He's so old that he just, like, disintegrates into the air. And he... I think it says, and their last impression was of those eyes blinking in wonder and a sigh of the most profound and exhausted relief. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah. It's another interesting thing, though, to be like, so he's the authority. He's the creator of all of this power structure that Metatron has taken over and been using to abuse civilizations. And so he is at fault, and
true.
Like, the authority is at fault and to blame for a lot of the system. He might have started off as a benevolent creator slash dictator, but also we've had parts of this book that say, like, he's claiming to be the creator, but he never created anything. He's assumed this power. So it's this figure of this, like, ancient power that's been brought low, that's been reduced down to being helpless in a very baby Voldemort at the train station kind of way.
True. Do you know what
Harry Potter drinks, but also fuck JK Rowling?
Yes. Do you know what also reminds me of?
Yes.
That bit in that I haven't seen the live action version, so the animated version of The Little Mermaid, where where Ursula turns King Triton into one of those little weird sea worm things.
Yeah.
It's vibes. Yes, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I guess that Phil had me, because I was like, oh no. Oh, good for you, hon. Like, go and be one with the world. And I was like, actually, no, you did a lot of bad things.
Well, it's that thing. It's being like, but at the same time, all of the power that he had been abusing as the authority with a capital A had been taken away from him by Metatron, as he had lost his faculties, lost his, like, became feeble.
Yeah.
And that now he is innocent and has been, quite frankly, subjected to elder abuse by the angels, because that's the way that we've seen him, that's the way he's depicted. And so it's really Phil's asking us to hold nuance, but in a way that I think could have been, we could have had a little bit more, been more reminded of how much of a tyrant this character was in his youth while pitying him in his old age. Because he is very much written as a pitiful character. And I think that's a point as well. Like, he's not dying, like, he is dying with some dignity, and Lyra will give him that dignity, but it's not in a way that is the same as we're about to see, like, Lee's disintegration. It is more helpless, and it's like,
for sure.
we've got a lot of different ways to die this chapter.
Truly,
first we have not dying properly by choice, but by jumping into an abyss. Then we have disintegrating, but having been kind of saved and feeling relieved.
Don't forget the dying in battle.
And we have dying in battle. Straight back to square one for Telly. He's been through the world of the dead and now he's got to do it again.
Oh no. God, yeah. Yeah, it's also worth, like, pointing out with the authority how unimportant his arc eventually became and becomes in the books. We've heard about the authority for so long in these books, and it's a very behind the curtain moment from Phil to be like, well, here he is, and he's just gonna disintegrate.
He has no power. The Regent is the one that had power. That's Metatron. But at the same time, the Regent only took over from a pre-existing system.
So
very difficult.
So we then meet a new Gallivespian. We've met them before. We've met them before.
We met Madame Oxenteel. We met Madame Oxenteel after she's taken over from Lord Roke. R.I.P. Poor one out for Roke.
God, and so she's inherited.
She's inherited his Blue Hawk.
So then we just get like hundreds and hundreds of Gallivespians showing up. It's cool, isn't it? It's really cool. So then Oxy tells them to follow the Gallivespians to their demons. And then rip Sally.
But her work is done. She's safely helped the kids get through their adventure, and she's handed them off to the next lot of Gallivespians. She's like, I'm done. I'm peacing out. And she's gone to go, and she's maybe Tally's hanging out and waiting for her, so that they can do the journey again together.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Will's really upset about Tally, and then Lyra's really upset about Sally. I guess because they carried each of them, like,
they each had like little travel chats probably along the way. And also, I remember, like, if you remember way back when, Lyra had a bit of beef with Tally. They were like a little bit, and Sally was always the one that, like, jumped in and was like more able to communicate with and like bond with Lyra. And so they had their buddies.
So they're running to their demons. Gallivespians are fighting things, beings, people off. The horse people are back.
Look, at least it wasn't just like a one-line mention.
Truly,
you know?
Yeah.
At least they actually became relevant. Because I was convinced that we would never see them again, and that Phil was like, sure, just have horse people. It's all right. Horse people are back. They're a legit baddie now.
Also, Bear Dad is back.
Yorick is back. Who better to save the day from some weird horse people than Bear Dad?
I'm so happy. I'm so happy to see Yorick.
I was worried we wouldn't see him again, but we do.
Yeah. We do. I'm also like, I hate the fact, obviously he's back, he's with other bears, he's coming to help. I hate the fact, but also think it's quite funny that he gets stuck in a net.
I like that Will saves him. It's very, is it an Aesop's fable? Is it there's like an old fairy tale style fable that is a lion getting trapped in a net and mice. Or is it even Aslan? And mice come and chew the cords that are tying Aslan down to the stone altar in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Wow. Interesting.
But Will is living his mouse life by rescuing a very large creature from a net here, is what I have to say. And I love that. I love that he, like, scrambles around and does the net. And his whole thing of, like, there's a net coming at him and he just, like, wangs the knife in the air and cuts through it before it can, like, love it.
Love
Great.
It.
Perfect.
Love it. I love that the horse people, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know if they come back, but I love that they exist just for this reason.
Yeah,
they were brought in last chapter, so we knew who they were, and then this chapter they cause a little bit of mild peril for Yorick.
Yeah. Look, Yorick is a tank and we needed an enemy worthy of a tank.
Yeah.
And yes, perfect. Because like, he's not really going to do much against the Spectres or
no,
a lot of the other, all the angels. And like, we haven't got a lot of like physical enemy descriptions.
No.
So this is great. We love it. Yeah. Yes.
Yorick. So,
and also gruesome.
Gruesome. So Will and Lyra then ride on Yorick. He says, get on.
Yeah.
Come on, hop on.
He's changed his tune from book one, where he's like, mm-hmm. couldn't possibly carry Lyra and my armor. And now he's like, Lyra, Will, hop up.
Get up.
I guess it's more of an emergency.
Yeah. Yeah. So the birds and the Galvaspians are fighting the horse people, and I guess whoever else might be around. And then Oxy's like, go and find your demons, because the specters and the ghosts are fighting to get closer to where the demons are in like a grove.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyra and Will can both see the specters really clearly now.
Yeah, scary. This is mm-hmm. it. Our babies, they're all growing up.
Yeah.
In a scary
way. I'm not surprised, because of everything that they've seen and done, that is going to make you grow up a little bit faster than maybe you normally would.
Yes. Yeah. They also can feel, there's a lovely line that is, as soon as they saw the little group of trees, Lyra and Will both knew their demons were in there, and that if they didn't reach them soon, they would die. But it's also like, is it because, I feel like in my head simultaneously, that line is, it's that feeling when you've needed a wee the whole way home and then you just reach the front door. And if you don't get in through the front door right now, you will pee your pants.
Yeah.
That same energy of like, we're so close. If we don't reach them immediately, we'll die. But also it's because, oh no, they're in so much peril. If we don't get to them soon, the specters will overtake them and we can't be there to protect them. So it's like double peril. I don't have a real life scenario that lines up to the second one.
Yes. No, I get that. I get that.
Yes.
Everyone's helping. Yorick like charges through the witches. There's lots of flares in the sky, like the witches come and like move them and like put them out so that the grove where the demons are is like not as illuminated as it was. Like we said, the ghosts are fighting the specters. It's like, as horrible as the situation is, it's also like really nice because just everyone's helping.
Yeah, it's very like the whole gang is here and we're all pitching in. There's a lovely line as well about like Will and Lyra. And now the trees were only a few yards away. Will and Lyra both felt their missing selves close by. Mm-hmm. An excitement, a wild hope chilled with fear because specters were thick among the trees and they would have to go in directly among them. And the very sight of them evoked that nauseating weakness at the heart.
Yeah.
Ooh, again, that nausea. But also they're like, mm-hmm. they're missing selves.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. And then, right, we thought, we were so sure last chapter that we'd said bye to Lee and that we'd said bye to Joppery, but we were wrong.
We were wrong. Thank you to our lovely patrons in the Discord that pointed out that we have the memories of Sivs and that it's okay. We will get a chance to say goodbye again.
Mm-hmm. And I think the best bit about this, sorry, Will and Joppery, is that Lee and Yorick get to have a moment.
Yeah. Bear Dad and Balloon Dad together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Lee, said Yorick, Lee, my comrade, I've never seen this before. You are dead. What am I speaking to? Yorick, old fella, you don't know the half of it. We'll take over now. The specters aren't afraid of bears. Lyra, Will, come this way and hold up that knife. I love Yorick, old fella.
Yeah. It's so sweet, but it's also very businesslike. They're both businessy, mm-hmm. businessy folks. That I was like, Yorick knows that we're in the battle. Lee knows that we're in a battle. They're going to say hey. They're going to say hey to their buddy, but they're not going to dilly-dally.
Exactly. But it's nice that they get to have a moment at all. It's very nice.
Yes, very much. Also, I can just imagine them, if Lee didn't disintegrate at the end of this chapter, if they'd have just gone for a little like drink together, and Lee would be like, oh, did you ever find my body? And Yorick would be like, yeah, definitely buried that. Definitely didn't eat it. Nope.
Absolutely. I think that Lee would love it. I think he'd be like, hell yeah. I hope it fed you.
I was like, how was that liver? I bet it was like whiskey soaked and beautiful.
Yeah.
I worked on it for you all my friend.
It's been marinating in whiskey for years, just for you.
Just for you. Just for you, buddy.
Yeah. So the specter, the situation with the specters is dire. They're like you just read that part, they're closing in on the demons. Lyra then thanks like everyone that's helped before they go into the grove, which is really nice. She's like, thank you all. I'm like, oh,
well, that's it. Sweet. This is it with Yorick. It's yeah. Just thank you, my dear. There aren't words. Bless you, bless you.
Yeah.
My dear again for Yorick. I love that she calls him my dear all the yeah. time. And he's just like, no time. Go.
Yeah. Classic Yorick. A classic Yorick move.
Goodbye, Bear Dad.
Bye, Bear Dad. Whoa. So Lyra and Will like head into the grove, like Lee and the ghosts, and it's very confusing. There's a lot of like ghosts fighting specters, lots of like mist and cloud and all this kind of shit everywhere, and the ghosts are like egging them on, being like, oh, it's this way. And then came a cry in a voice that Lyra knew and loved better than any other. Oh, come quick Lyra, Pan darling, I'm here. Pan, we haven't seen Pan in so long.
We love him. Oh, yeah. Yes. And they like hurl themselves through mm-hmm. the dark towards their demons, and it's gorgeous, but the specters are there too, and it's mm-hmm. terrifying, and there's like so much going on. And
Will then stabs a specter,
yeah, which is just weird, because it like it chills his arm all the way down when he yeah. stabs it, and it's like his arm got like half spectered while he was trying to stab it.
Yeah.
And like the knife clearly works, but not in that thick of a area of specters, yeah. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe less so as well now that Will is old enough that he can fully see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. Probably about to tell me that they find the demons.
Oh no, that's okay. They done found them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's lovely. And Lee is crying. He says, there, cried Lee. See him by that big rock. Mm-hmm. Love that they're just chilling. He's like, Lee's chilling always involved. Rock. He's scouting yeah. out. And they're wild cats.
Two wild cats.
We know that Wildcat Pan's one of our favourite pans, and I love yeah. that they're wild cats. And we know that cats have like an affinity with Will. So like
yeah.
Wildcat is the perfect choice mm-hmm. for both of these demons to be together, especially in like a fight or flight scenario.
Yes.
Love it.
There's too much going on for them to actually tell which demon is which.
Yes.
They're like, if we had a minute, we'd be able to tell. But we haven't got a fucking minute, do you know what I mean?
Yes. And they go in, Will, no trouble using the knife. Lyra's like, cut a window quick. Will cuts the window.
It's Jopper that says that, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Can you cut through, said John Parry's ghost.
Of course.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Will, please, said Lyra, gasping, when yes. she's telling him to hurry up.
Yeah.
That was it. And yes, Will cuts the window. And even in that horrible urgency, even at that moment of utmost peril, each of them felt the same little shock of excitement, for Lyra was holding Will's demon, the nameless wildcat, and Will was carrying Pantalaimon. They scooped up each other's demons.
They did. They tore their glance away from each other's eyes. Oh, they had a little moment. I love yes. it. I love it. I love a little moment between people when there's like so much going on.
So much it's going so on. They're holding each other's demons. This is a very intense moment. And Lyra still manages to say goodbye, Mr. Scoresby. Oh, I thank you, goodbye. And Lee says, goodbye, my dear child, goodbye, Will, go well. And they scramble through, but Will stood still and looked into the eyes of his father's ghost, brilliant in the shadows. Before he left him, there was something he had to say, and I love this line.
Yeah.
So much. Will said to his father's ghost, you said I was a warrior. You told me that was my nature and I shouldn't argue with it. Father, you were wrong. I fought because I had to. I can't choose my nature, but I can choose what I do. And I will choose, because now I'm free. And his father's smile was full of pride and tenderness. Well done, my boy. Well done indeed, he said. And then Will couldn't see him anymore because he wasn't looking. He had already turned to follow Lyra through the yeah. window. I mm-hmm. love it. It's great. It's the exact right response from Will. He's mm-hmm. finally kind of gone, yeah, you're not all you're cracked up to be, Dad.
Yeah.
And you told me a bunch of stuff that I tried to live up to, and I figured this out for myself, actually. Thank yeah. you. And yeah. you told me I was a warrior, and people keep telling me I'm a fighter. And no, it's not about how I'm fighting or that I'm fighting. It's what I'm fighting for. And it's amazing. Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's such a huge difference between people that can fight when they know they have to, and people that choose over and over again to fight when maybe it's not necessarily, and I mean fight as in physical mm-hmm. fight. And I feel like it's really nice to hear Will make this distinction because, you know, we have kind of labeled him a little bit. I mean, I said it last episode as like a violent boy. He's got like a violent streak in him when it's necessary. And we've talked before about, like, you know, whether we think that's like a good or a bad trait. It's much more nuanced than that. But the fact that he is now saying to his dad, of all people, who he's craved this relationship with, the fact that he's saying, like, you know what, Dad, you're wrong, and I choose to not, you know, to not fight, to not be a warrior, unless I need to. And I'm not going to, like, make my life about that.
Yeah, I'm not the knife bearer. I'm not a weapon in this great war. I'm Will and I care about Lyra. I'm Will and I care about my mum. Like, and I will fight for the people that I love, but not be just a capital W warrior. Like, no. And I love that for him. I love that he gets to say that. I love that this is their goodbye. And also what is nice is I was initially like mildly edged because I kind of liked that as like a last word to his dad from Will. And the fact that Joffrey does get a last word in and says, well done, my boy, well done indeed. Almost being like, haha, that was the lesson I taught you all along. I was a bit irked by it. But actually, I'm choosing to view it as like, it's really lovely for Will that he still gets to have his father be proud of him when 100%. He's made choices that are defiant of what his father wished for him.
I completely agree. Like, I'm glad that he said that to him and it ended that way so that Will gets some closure, because poor Will, you know, he hasn't had much closure in his life so far. And now he gets it.
Yeah.
And now we get a really sad bit that I'll read and make everyone cry. I'll actually just read the whole last bit. And now that their purpose was achieved, and now the children have found their demons and escaped, the dead warriors allowed their atoms to relax and drift apart at long, long last. Out of the little grove, away from the baffled spectres, out of the valley, past the mighty form of his old companion, the armor-clad bear, the last little scrap of the consciousness that had been the aeronaut Lee Scoresby floated upwards, just as his great balloon had done so many times. Untroubled by the flares and the bursting shells, deaf to the explosions and the shouts and cries of anger and warning and pain, conscious only of his movement upwards, the last of Lee Scoresby passed through the heavy clouds and came out under the brilliant stars, where the atoms of his beloved demon Hester were waiting for him.
I'm fine.
I'm okay. I'm not crying, okay? I'm not.
I'm fine. Yes, the kids are safe. The battle has been achieved. I do kind of find it hilarious that the ghosts are like, cool, the kids are safe, we'll peace out now. And there's still spectres everywhere and like witches and various other warriors that might have to deal with the spectres, but the ghosts are like, peace, bye.
Yeah, that was their only job, you know? It's such a lovely description.
It's so lovely. In the grand scheme of deaths that we've had this chapter, and deaths as they are written throughout these books, I think Lee Scoresby just wins.
He's the only character that's had two deaths.
Hey, I died twice.
Yes, exactly.
In the words of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I think the way that last paragraph was worded, I loved so much. The mention of the balloon, obviously the mention of Hester. I think that it was really meaningful and the right choice to have the chapter end on Lee dying. Because they could have flipped it. It could have been Mrs. Coulter and Asriel. But I think that, it's just a really nice, meaningful moment for Lee, who is a main character in this book series, but I feel like he can be overlooked sometimes for, like, the bigger players. And it's nice, it's similar to Mary, like, it's nice to give him that moment again. And it was just such a well-written paragraph as well.
Yeah, it's so nice. So it feels like, despite being an incredibly busy chapter, we've been given like closure with a lot of the like smaller beloved characters in that way. Like, we got to see Yorick again, we got to have Will have a moment with Joffrey, we got to say goodbye to Tally and Sally, no matter how small it was, like, we know where we're at with them. We've got to say goodbye to Balloon Dad. Like, the Masriel chapter, well, the Masriel section of the chapter feels like an entirely different chapter that has its own level of like some closure and some lack of closure, because I guess nobody knows what's happened to them.
Yeah.
But everything that happens with Lyra and Will just like works and ties up really nicely and just leaves us feeling like, oh, thank God they've got their demons back. They've made it to safety. They've said hi and bye to everyone they love.
Yeah.
And we can kind of like put a little bow on it.
Yeah. It was a really, really good chapter, in fairness. Really good.
Yeah. Very busy. I think it's kind of the longest chapter we've done in a while, but also mm-hmm. just like the most to cover in a chapter we've done yeah. in a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. What is the next chapter? Chapter called, Rich? The next
chapter is called Morning.
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 Oh, okay. I'm hoping things chill out a little
yeah.
bit.
That was a very action-packed chapter, so yeah, I'm ready for a little break, a little snooze. Yeah.
So who's your reward for?
Well,
it's a fucking difficult one, isn't it?
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think who's had awards recently. This is the thing. And who is it my last chance to give an award to? Mm. And so I feel like I want to just give like a general like best dad mug to like both Lee and Yorick, if I'm allowed to, because it's nice to have them both back. It's the last of Lee. It's a quick high and bye to Yorick.
Yeah.
Just a little two world's best dad mugs.
Yeah. It's so funny because I wrote down pretty much the exact same thing. I was like, I can't, because I gave like Coulter one recently and the monkey. So I was like, I can't decide between Lee and Yorick. So I think, yeah, let's just give them both the best dad award.
Also, not as giving two adoptive parents the best dad mugs while like Lyra's actual parents sacrifice themselves for her this chapter.
Oops. Well, you know, I mean, we've got more of an emotional connection to the dads that actually gave
exactly.
a shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Love that. Mm-hmm. This is the last time you'll have to hear from us regarding our little review spiel, though it is always useful to leave us a review because it helps support the podcast. We've finished the little review spiel competition that we've had going with the prize draw. And so if you have sent us a review, check your inboxes. You will either be getting an email very soon or you will have already had an email from us letting you know if you need to send us your address to receive some goodies.
Yes. And thank you to everyone that's left a review. And like Rich said, keep them coming because they are really useful to us. They make sure that, you know, we're visible on those platforms. Also, we have merch, lots of lovely, lovely merch. So if you want to buy any of that, because that's really helpful to us as well, you can go to hdmpod.co.uk/shop. And, you know, you can tell a friend about us. You can shout us out on social media. All those things really help. And we have the Patreon as well, which we've mentioned earlier, which is patreon.com/hdmpod.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thanks so much to everyone for everything.
I get you. I'm feeling like we're coming towards the end of the book, so it's a little bit more like emotional now, isn't it?
It's a big chapter. I'm just going to spend all my time thanking, just like Lyra, all my time thanking everyone, being like, thank you, my dear, bless you.
Yeah, yeah. Why not, you know?
Exactly.
Why not? Thank you to everyone that has listened and that is, you know, it's a big task to undergo to listen to all these episodes. There's so many. Mm-hmm. So if you've stuck with us, thank you so much.
Yes.
Yay.
We love you.
We do.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Her Dark Materials. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HDMPod, and you can email us at herdartmaterialspod@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at hdmpod.co.uk.
If you want to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/hdmpod. We also have a shop where you can buy merch featuring all original artwork from Rich. You can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. I'm Faye, and when I'm not crying about literally everyone dying, you can find me talking about Paramore on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Twitter and Instagram at Still Into You Pod.
I'm Rachel, and when I'm not here chatting to you lovely folks about mom and dad and the third wheel endlessly falling into the abyss, I'm making cute and magical arty things. You can find me over on Instagram at RachMakes, on Twitter and TikTok at Rach_makes, and over on my online shop, rachmakes.co.uk. The theme music for the podcast was written and produced by Johnny Knott.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. And don't forget,
keep telling stories.
And all will be well.
Bye. Gonna go cry now.
Right. R.I.P. everyone.
R.I.P. everyone. What would you do if I was like, I just haven't been recording?